Good afternoon. Welcome to our celebration of the life and accomplishments of our friend and colleague, Dr. Jean Peterson. I'm John Duvall, CEO of VCU Hospitals, and one of what I'd say is a legion of friends, proudly, one of the legion of individuals that count themselves as friends of Jean Peterson. Before we begin the program today, we'd like to celebrate Jean's accomplishments and the many lives he's touched with a special video that's been put together. So if we could cue the video, please. Sarah, Carolyn, Andrew, I'm so happy you're here today to share the reflections of Jean's other family. And it's it was a huge family and continues and will be huge into the into the future. It's somehow fitting that today we're in Richmond, Virginia, but today's event is being streamed across the nation because Jean's impact was national and it was global in terms of the lives he's touched, how he led us, how he mentored us in such a short time, such a remarkably short time. As evidenced by this room, the tremendous impact that he had on all of us, thousands of colleagues that he shared his time with, and importantly, the generations of learners that'll come through our system, perhaps never knowing Jean as an individual, but whose lives will be forever touched by his good works. I want you to know that I do carry Jerry Strauss' personal regards and warm wishes today. He's out of country on a long planned trip, but I think he's here in spirit, and he sends his regrets that he could not be here in person with you. But since we're talking about Jerry, I want to go back a little bit into history. And about 3.5 years ago, maybe almost 4 years ago, Jerry and I were sitting in his office contemplating the changes that were confronting graduate medical education, the changing expectations around quality, safety, the learning environment, the integration of resident undergraduate curriculum into the quality and safety apparatus of our institutions. And we knew we had to raise our game. We knew for the well-being of our learners in the environment, we needed to raise our game. And so as we were contemplating these changes, we said, you know, there is a role. There's a role that needs to be created that would take the best of our academic and educational enterprise and unite it with our tremendous journey towards high reliability in the clinical enterprise. And so we assembled bright people. We crafted a definition of what that role was going to be, a description. And we went out to the world to find an individual who would join us, that would have the core values, that would understand the importance of integrating these important elements of education, and that would bring the commitment to learning, the commitment to quality, the commitment to the humans that we serve every single day, and would bridge and capitalize on the intellect, the energy, the enthusiasm, the commitment of our learners, and accelerate together our journey to high reliability. So we searched and we searched and we kept searching. We were searching for a golden, perhaps even platinum, a pile of needles. I mean, there's so many talented individuals, but we just kept searching because there was something we were looking for, a certain magic, somebody that would show up, that would have the experience, the vision, the commitment, the belief in our academic purpose. And that person was Jean Peterson. And when he arrived, we over time we became convinced that it wasn't that we couldn't find the right, that the job was waiting for him. It was the perfect job for the perfect individual, and indeed they came and became our first Chief Quality and Safety Officer and Associate Dean for Patient Safety and Patient Care. We searched for the best and the brightest, and we got that, and frankly, much, much more. Jean quickly became an amazing rate. I mean, we're one big complex organization, and yet Jean came in and in an astonishingly short amount of time, integrated himself into the culture of the organization, touched individuals, and really became quickly recognized for his mantra of always doing the right thing. It's the first question that he asked. And he instilled so much trust in people. The decisions just continued to mount of him as an individual and his good works. A physician, a scholar, a scientist, an adventurer, a leader, a skier, a skier. Little did I know that one of the most effective tools for me to recruit was a picture of my son and me on top of Superior in Alta, Utah. There's a similar photograph that you saw today. And so we had great connection and a love for the Southwest. He's a trekker, a visionary. Jerry the other day referred to him as a deep thinker, a mentor. Friend. We searched for a great leader and we found a great friend. I'm fond of saying Gene possessed a beautiful intellect, but even a more beautiful heart. I think you know that actually days before his passing, Jerry, myself, Ron Clark, Deborah Davis visited the home and we presented Gene with a letter from Dr. Rao appointing him as VCU's first incumbent professor of quality safety and service in resident education. I think that professorship is a reflection of the foundational work that he did at this organization in leading us towards a bright and vibrant future for our learners. And that work is so impactful and will continue to be. And he made such tremendous progress that on Friday, and the recognition of that progress, that on Friday, the Virginia Commonwealth University Board of Visitors approved the renaming of this professorship to the Gene N. Peterson, MD, Professorship in Quality, Safety, and Service in Resident Education. And so that name... This important action of the Board of Visitors, I think, ensures that Gene's work, his presence, his spirit, his vision will live on in perpetuity in this organization and for the thousands upon thousands of learners that will graduate from our programs going forward. It's a special legacy. It's a beautiful legacy. And it's a legacy so well earned by my friend Gene Peterson. So with that, if I could invite my friend Ron Clark up to the podium, please.
Boy, there may be no tears in heaven, but there may be a few here today. my name is Ron Clark. I'm the Chief Medical Officer of the health system, and it was really my privilege to be a partner with Gene from day one when he got here. It's a privilege to work in an organization with leaders like John Duvall and Jerry Strauss, who could look across the horizon and see where we needed to go and have the vision and the creativity to create a position like Gene's. And gosh, were we ever lucky to get him here. So Sarah, Carolyn, Andrew, we are so blessed to have you all come and be part of our family for a while. So I was asked to talk a little bit about what it was like to work with Gene. You know, I searched for a metaphor that would describe him. Shooting star was the first thing that came to mind because of that bright light that lived briefly on our horizon that just fills you with awe when you see it. But Gene was much brighter and longer lasting that it was much more impactful, kind of like a meteor. But not in the destructive way. So whatever the antimatter of his meteor is, sort of like that. But he was more than impactful. He was a magnet, and people cited that in the brochure you have, how he drew people together. But magnets are static, and Gene wasn't static. He was more like a catalyst. He would draw people together, and enzymatically, things would begin to happen. But it wasn't just when people came together. The guy was an incubator of ideas and thoughts and solutions. And it was just such a thing of beauty to watch him work and in motion. And yeah, he was a skier, but he was in some ways like an Olympic rower, because they are at the same time moving with purpose, but doing it so gracefully that you don't even recognize the motion until you have a point in the horizon and see the speed that they're moving. And it looks effortless. But that's not right, because rowers are unidirectional. And Gene was anything but unidirectional. He was multidimensional. So I gave up on a metaphor, and I just decided that Gene was, quite frankly, a unique gift. And that's the best metaphor I can come up with. A lot of adjectives to describe Gene's work: thoughtful, kind, interested, an astute observer, a careful listener. Kathy Cooper called that out in her sense. Well done, Kathy. A deep thinker, as Jerry said, and a detailed planner. How many times I would be in his office and he would say, okay, I think A, B, and C, and therefore we're going to do one, and then two, and then three, because the impact is going to be P, D, and Q. And I was like, yeah, Gene, that's amazing. I see that. And then go in the next day, and he'd say, okay, so I'm thinking, I see A, you know, one, two, and three, and therefore, and he'd go through it again. I'd never seen anyone who was able to encapsulate things carefully. In the thoughtful and enthusiastic category, just a few vignettes here for a few minutes. 2 years ago, my wife and I started planning a trip to Antarctica. And by that, I mean my wife was planning the trip and I would carry the bags, which is the way things go in our house. And I happened to mention this to Gene before the pictures went up on his wall of his trip to Antarctica. And I kid you not, he was 10 times more enthusiastic than I ever was about the trip. He told me all the great things I'll see in terms of penguins and orcas and humpback whales. And within 24 hours on my desk in my office, there was a 2-inch thick textbook on the animal and plant life of Antarctica. Now, who knew Antarctica had plant life? But you who studied Antarctica a little bit know that it all begins with the tiny little plants embedded in this that the shrimp eat, and then things eat shrimp, and then bigger things come and eat them, and so forth. But he loved information. He loved to share in your experiences. I discovered, and this is the first time it's probably ever been called out in public, the Peterson Triad. Gene loved a difficult problem, and he loved to sit down and talk about it. And he loved a difficult problem to sit down and talk about it with a beer. So he said many times in our gatherings that we really needed to go and out and have a beer and talk about some of these things that we had been noodling on. And I never did take Gene up on that suggestion, but we'd frequently go to the cafeteria and get Elaine's soup. And come up and sit in his office, and we solved world problems that the world didn't even know it had. In recognition of Gene's love for IPAs, and there's a story about him with his arm up to his elbow in a big container of ice water searching for the last one, I brought in 6 IPAs today for the reception, and if those of you who are brave enough and dedicated, you can have at it and try to get one later. Gene had a great sense of humor. We do behavior expectation for error prevention, beep training, and I knew as soon as he'd gone through his, because the next day or two he walked into my office and said, "Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, what is going on here?" And I was like, okay. He gets it, so good. Gene, his mind never really strayed too far when he was off on one of his ski trips. He brought back this T-shirt for me, and I don't know if through the magic of cameras if you can see it, but it says, confidence is the feeling you get just before you fully comprehend the situation. And it's a picture of a skier about to go off one of those crazy things, Andrew. I don't know what you call it, but it's like a big drop that no human being should attempt to do. A cliff, yeah. So Gene and I would go around talking about over the next weeks or whatever afterwards, how we were that we understood and had fixed that situation. He also liked to say, dude, explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old. And this is when we come across some condition that absolutely made no sense when you stopped to look at it and clearly needed his golden touch. Gene lived a principled life, and he expected leaders to lead by example. And this became so apparent to me one day. I was in his hospital room, and I walked in, and his first words out of his mouth were, "Can you believe the patent arrogance, the audacity, the unmitigated hubris?" And I'm like, "Oh Lord." So it was the surgeon just in here. Don't laugh, John, because my next thought, it must have been John Duvall. Just kidding. You did complete my evaluation earlier this week. And then he launches into this tirade about Volkswagen. I'm like, here's the guy in the hospital getting chemotherapy and whatever, and he is totally incensed by this group of leaders who have obviously respect for their customers and their brand, and he just goes on and on. And I'm like, whoa, he really lives this stuff. Gene was an optimist. He always would say our best days are ahead of us. And he would say that when he would come to his meetings with infection control epidemiology, with Gonzalo and the team there, or the unique pathogen unit, and he would see the great work they're doing, or Marcos Cachioras, one of the folks that Gene helped recruit in as our hospitalist, or Ryan Vega, and I know I'm leaving out too many people, but he always felt like, you know, our future is so much brighter because of you all, so thank you. Lastly, I just want to say, Gene was a friend who gave me sound advice. Earlier this year, my father was really sick suddenly, and I didn't realize how sick he was. And I said, well, you know, why don't you just bring him to VCU, and it'll be easier for the family and so forth. So he got here, and I told Gene, I need to be away for a couple meetings. And my dad's upstairs, and he's in the ICU. And Gene just stopped me right there, and he said, Ron, you need to be present. And he did that little finger thing where he emphasized being present. And I knew immediately what he meant. And I tried to say, well, but I can come back down for the 1 o'clock meeting. And he stopped me. He said, Ron, your father needs his son. Be present. And later, when fortunately my dad got better and he came back for some elective procedures and so forth, Gene would know because Debbie would tell him. And he would come up to me and he said, your father's going to be here next week and I want you to be present. And I knew exactly what he meant. And so I would cancel things off my calendar and I would go and I would be present. This past fall, my daughter was married. And leading up to the wedding, I got three pieces of advice from three friends, and all were unsolicited. The first was, you only have to say one thing. It's her mother and I do. Okay, I got that. The second piece of advice from another friend was when you're walking down the aisle, walk slowly. And if you think you're walking slowly, slow down. And the third piece of advice was from my friend Gene Peterson, who told me to be present. And what I didn't know at the time was Gene had just been diagnosed with cancer right before he told me that. And he didn't tell me about his diagnosis for about 3 weeks later after the wedding. So that was his gift to me. That was his example of living by high standards and principles because he believed in what he said. So I learned a lot from Gene, how to embrace complex problems with a friend and a beer, how to have high standards and principles and live by them, truly live by them, and expect other leaders to do the same. I learned to observe, think, reflect, change, and then teach, which he did so well. I learned to be present. And as Gene would say, our best days are ahead of us. Ta-ta for now. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Lisa Brath, and I worked with Gene in a lot of different areas, but mostly we got to work together in the unique pathogens unit. And Ron, we had that beer. That was a good IPA. I'm going to have to read to kind of keep it together. Life is full of strange parallels. In December of 2013, Gene Peterson and his family were really just settling into Richmond and VCU. He was still in the process of meeting people, getting to know our system, making some initial assessments, and developing an agenda for the next few years in his role as Chief Safety and Quality Officer and Associate Dean of Patient Safety and Quality Care. Meanwhile, 4,500 miles away in the small remote village of Meliandu, Guinea, West Africa, a 2-year-old boy named Emil began suffering from a headache, fever, and diarrhea. Despite his family's best efforts, he soon died and was followed within a few days by his 3-year-old sister and their pregnant mother. Unbeknownst to any of us at the time, this was the start of the most devastating Ebola outbreak ever seen, one that to date has infected more than 28,000 and killed more than 11,000 people, 11 times the total number of cases of all the other outbreaks combined. I know for a fact that creating a biocontainment or unique pathogens unit and team was not on Gene's agenda. But as the world slowly realized the magnitude of the problem and we began to make contingency plans here at VCU, it was only natural that Gene should lead that effort. He quickly teamed up with Robin Mankey of Emergency Management, and the two of them worked with our infection prevention team and the School of Medicine Simulation Center to begin initial simulation and training exercises in PPE. I don't think they ever thought we'd ever have to put it to work. But all of this came to head at VCU on October 13th, when a young woman visiting from Liberia presented with a fever, first to a local health clinic, and then subsequently to VCU Center as its first suspected patient with Ebola. Of note, this was the same week that Nina Pham and Amber Vinson, nurses at Texas Presbyterian who cared for Eric Duncan, were diagnosed with Ebola. Clearly, tensions and emotions were running high. While we and our patient were very fortunate, her Ebola virus PCR returned negative, we all realized that the initial plans that included shutting down part of our medical respiratory ICU needed some modification. So did our approach to PPE and training and team building. For the next few months, things moved at an impressive pace. Within a month, Gene worked the space on North 2, formerly our burn unit and burn ICU. Then Sim Center was identified, remodeling was started, an official UPU team was formed, and after a detailed and lengthy site visit, we became one of the original 35 C-designated Ebola treatment centers in the country. Gene sent some of us to the University of Nebraska and others to Emory to learn from those experts, to see firsthand how they created those units and how they treated their patients. In February, we took care of our very first returning traveler in the new space. And over the span of that week, put into practice all that we had worked to create. Gene was so proud to point out that we had accomplished in a few short months what Emory, Nebraska did over the span of 10 years. And while we were not designated as one of the 10 Health and Human Services regional centers, that little place, John something or other, north of here, was instead. Everyone who has visited us since then, from the governor, the CDC, to NIOSH, have all commented that we have one of the best units and teams they have seen in the whole country. Gene also had always the larger vision in sight. While realizing that Ebola had captured the attention of the world and the nation, it was only the latest highly infectious disease to hit the news in our world, following the tracks of smallpox, influenza, SARS, and now MERS. He wanted us to be ready for whatever came next. He was a gracious reader and a great thinker. I'll miss the late nights. In early mornings that we texted back and forth and emailed articles. One morning about 5 a.m., we sent each other the very same obscure PowerPoint presentation on SARS and infected healthcare workers within minutes of each other. Other days, he would just call and say, let's meet on the UPU. He had something he wanted to discuss. a pad of paper in one hand and the end of his pen between his teeth. We would talk about everything from central lines to Ebola to, I think, our favorite, comparing hiking trails on the West Coast versus the East Coast. I want us to keep track of his vision going forward. It was twofold. First, he wanted us to continue to seek a regional and even national presence of Ebola and other highly infectious diseases. He wanted us to host a meeting of CDC treatment and assessment centers to not only share information, but also to help drive the conversation. I'm proud to say that vision will come true. Just this week, in conversations with the Virginia Department of Health, they've agreed that the first Virginia Ebola Summit Conference will be held in Richmond, Virginia this spring, bringing together Virginia's two CDC-designated centers, VCU and UVA, along with the rest of the state assessment hospitals. Somewhere Gina smiled. Second, he wanted us to use our PPE training and lessons learned on the UPU to make our everyday life safe for our patients and our providers. Both SARS and Ebola taught us it's not enough to just buy the equipment, have to develop a system and make it a part of culture. I'm happy to say this is also moving forward. None of this would have happened without Gene's leadership and vision. While very aware of the fiscal implications of his decisions and of the already stretched personnel resources, he was always more concerned with what was right, what was safe, and what was best for our patients, for our providers. He asked a lot of us, but he never asked of us anything that he wouldn't do himself. He went through the full initial 8 hours of PPE training on the UPU, staying two nights till 11 o'clock to get it right. I learned a lot about leadership from Gene, and I could go on and on about those lessons, but instead I'll leave you with four quotes that really made me think of him, and I think you'll recognize his style in each of them. From John Wooden, the great UCLA coach, "If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, you need a team." From Nelson Mandela, "It is better to lead from behind and to put others in front, especially when you celebrate victory, when nice things occur. You take the front line when there is danger, then people will appreciate your leadership." From Rosalind Carter, "A leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes people where they don't want to go, but ought to be." And from Sherry Sandberg, "Leadership is about making others better as a result of your presence and making sure that your impact lasts in your absence." Having heard all of this, it should come as no surprise that Gene approached his illness and his inevitable death with the same philosophy. He built a team. He called each of us individually to his bedside and asked if we would play the role he had envisioned for us. While being a part of the UPU team has been a highlight of my professional career, I, for one, count myself fortunate and honored to have been part of an even greater team, Team Peterson. And that is something I will always hold dearly for the rest of my life. Gene Peterson was, without a doubt, the most gracious and grounded man I've ever had the privilege of knowing. So to Sarah, Andrew, Carolyn, thank you for sharing him with all of us, even if it was too brief. So on behalf of the whole UPU team, as Gene would always say, ta-ta for now. Thanks. Ron.
Good afternoon. I had the distinct pleasure of meeting somebody who 2 years ago changed my life. And I think as you look around and see the number of people here today, I suspect I'm not alone. My name's Ryan Vega. I first met Gene as his pupil and as a colleague and then as a friend. It was about 2 years ago on a Tuesday afternoon, Gene called me up and said, "Ryan, how are you doing tomorrow?" I said, "I'm going to be at work, Gene." He said, "Okay, you're presenting to the board. You have 5 minutes to do the presentation you did last week and eight, and it needs to be good." I said, "Okay." So there we were in the boardroom. The VCU board is coming in. There's Dr. Rao. There's Sheldon Rechen. And I start to get nervous. As they start to pin the microphone on me, I turn to Gene and said, "Gene, I'm nervous. What do I do?" And if you've ever worked with Gene, you know that he gets this look on his face. It's this look of, you can tell that he's thinking. He's deep in thought. And so there we are, the mentee, the mentor, and I'm waiting for the wisdom. I'm waiting for him to comfort me. And he pats me on the back and says, don't screw up. So when I was asked to speak for 5 minutes, Gene, I went to my wife and said, look, what do I talk about? What do I say? She said, well, what would Gene tell you? I said, well, he'd probably say something along the lines of don't screw up, but he'd have some choice words. As a role model, Gene embodied the essence of what it means to be the consummate professional. It didn't matter if you were emptying his trash or signing his paycheck. He treated you with the same dignity and respect that he would have treated his parents. He loved everyone around him. He found good in everybody and encouraged each of us to find good in those around us. He believed that each of us possessed unique talents, that it was about putting us in the right opportunity to be successful. Shortly after his diagnosis, he was visited by a few friends in private practice. Gene and I were sitting down. We were reflecting on that visit. And he said, you know, in 13 years, we never argued about time, money, or ego. And I said, well, what is the success to having that, or what is the success to that level of cohesiveness amongst the group? And he said 4 things. He said, transparency. He said, always encourage thanks. He said, recognize everyone's effort and respect. Now, those weren't words to Gene. Those were values. Those were values that he embodied. Those were values that he lived by. Those were values that as students and as residents, we could see came through in the way that he approached his job. On the surface, Gene was very gentle. He seemed very kind. But as you got to know him, there was a deep passion, a fire, something that drove him more than we really could understand. See, Gene's unique ability was to come into an organization and not make waves. He didn't have to. He was an undertow. After a year went by, you could look up and realize that we were far gone from where we thought we started. We weren't really sure how we got there, but we could tell that something was pulling us along. He did this largely because he role modeled what we all want to do. He put the patient first. And I'm not sure I can say it any better than Gene did, but he said simply, put the patient first, the rest will follow. As a mentor, Gene did not see his role as an advisor, though advice he often gave. He did not see his role as that of a guide, though direction and vision he often provided. Gene believed deeply in the role the individual experience plays into all of us, both our professional and personal development. He once told me, we choose our own path. We make our own decisions, we enjoy our own success, and we learn from our own failures. As a mentor, Gene felt that his responsibility was to create opportunity, to prevent you from ever becoming content with where you were, and to always be there in case you fell. He saw himself as a coach, and a damn good one he was. What attracted him to VCU was that he saw something special here. He truly believed we were on the path to becoming the safest health system, but he saw something missing. He truly believed that residents and students, that young physicians in training were going to be integral to the success of that mission. And he set out on a task to figure out a way to incorporate what we do every day across the entire organization. He envisioned a health system that trained the next generation of physicians. Not the most skilled surgeon or the brightest internist, but leaders. Leaders in healthcare delivery, leaders in the way we think, innovators in education, and people who could come and change the way that we approach patient care. He truly believed that the system was in place to do that. He started by developing a program, a leadership development program for the chief residents. He also wanted to further the careers of individuals by creating a path for those interested in quality to pursue it. And he wanted to send more and more people to the advanced training program at Intermountain Healthcare. He said that this changed my life. And if I have the opportunity to send more people out there and it could have some impact, then so be it. What Gene left us and what his legacy will be is a vision. The beautiful thing about a vision is that you can embrace it. And that long after any of us are gone, it can remain. And I once told him, he asked me, why do people so skeptical of people from New Orleans? And I said, well, we laugh at funerals, we cry at weddings, we dance when there's no music, and basically we're skeptical of anybody else who doesn't. I said, but there's something else. In New Orleans, we believe that goodbye is the greatest word. I never really understood it for a while. But if you say goodbye, it means you said hello. And if you said hello, it may have been to somebody who changed your life. I think every one of us is better off for having said hello to the man that is and was Gene Peterson. Thank you. Dr. Butterworth.
Good afternoon. I'm John Butterworth. I'm going to speak on behalf of those of us who work in the anesthesia department and in surgical services. It's a pretty tough job. The other speakers got to extol Gene's accomplishments as our first chief safety and quality officer, and I want to stipulate that he did a great job. There's no question about it. Gene was an absolute genius at knowing just how far he could push people and systems to get the maximal rate of change, but without initiating a backlash or anger or rebellion. My friend Will Zulzer pointed out to me that Gene was also a master at waiting out naysayers. He knew that he knew they were going to come around anyway, and there was really no reason to force the issue when they were going to be on the team next week anyway. But enough about this quality and safety stuff. Gene was also a member of our department, and he was a good anesthesiologist, which hasn't been brought up. He clearly was a good partner in his private practice in Washington and in the brief amount of time he also spent in Alaska. And, you know, several of us got to actually meet some of his former partners and colleagues who traveled from the West Coast to visit with Gene and Sarah as they were dealing with Gene's sarcoma. Back in Washington State, long before he ever got here, Gene was recognized for his expertise in obstetric anesthesia, as well as in anesthesia for orthosurgery. Here at VCU, Gene was recognized, always respected and well-liked by the students and the nurses, the residents, the staff physicians and surgeons, and our nurse anesthetists. And of course, I have to say, we were always afraid that Gene was going to catch us failing to factor our hands in the prescribed fashion. Gene was a friend and a colleague. That's apparent from what everyone else has been saying. He had good judgment. He was a trustworthy and reliable confidant. He was never too busy to discuss medical center issues. Gene and I had never actually met before he interviewed for the job here at VCU. It's actually kind of curious because we're both academic anesthesiologists. We're both exactly the same age. Both married for exact same amount of time to introverted women. We're both recovering Lutherans in the Swedish tradition. This latter allowed us to understand jokes about lutefisk and other arcane things. No one else knew what we were laughing about, but so what? There was a long list of colleagues that we both knew, and without fail, we had the same opinion about them, particularly the few who we had unfavorable opinions about. So we really hit it off quite well, and I particularly enjoyed Thursdays in the main 5-0-er when Gene had his clinical day, because between cases, we could sit on the bench across from the OR office like a pair of old pensioners watching the squirrels on the Capitol grounds just gossiping. But I really have nothing to add to the email I sent to the members of my department a short time ago, and it reads as follows. I'm heartbroken to inform you that our colleague Gene Peterson passed away a few hours ago. I have no doubt that the health system will continue to improve quality and safety. We will hire a chief quality and safety officer, and this person will be successful. But in my opinion, Gene, the person, cannot be replaced. Thanks. And now Andrew Ishizaka is going to speak.
Thank you. My name is Andrew, and it's my privilege to share with you my experiences with Gene as a mentor. And this has been a relationship that's evolved over the past 10 years that I knew him. And I'm 27 now, so he's been the most central person in my adult and professional life. So I was first introduced to Gene when I was 17 by my dad, who worked with him, because I had expressed an interest in medicine. And Gene was the first person who brought me to the OR. And because Gene was an anesthesiologist, of course, we would cruise around to all the different ORs. Every few months, we would go to a different room and different specialists. And we continued like this for 3 years. And before I knew it, I had been to all of these different types of surgery and really got a sense for the breadth that there is in surgery and all the different personalities amongst all the different surgeons. And in the meantime, I started to get involved in research and volunteering as an undergrad. And one day, about 3 years into this process, I ran into Gene in the hall, just coincidentally, and I said, "You know, Gene, I'm thinking about doing just a PhD in immunology and just doing basic research, and I don't think I have what it takes to be an MD PhD, and I don't think I have the emotional intelligence or the wherewithal to be a clinician." And he sat there and he looked at me and listened and said, "No, I don't think so. Andrew, you should do medicine. You won't regret it. Clinical medicine will be an excellent career for you. Trust me." And he said it with such confidence and resolve. And thinking back, I know now that Gene knew me better than I knew myself in that moment. And in particular, he knew that I was shying away from medicine for the wrong reasons, and that he needed to be my confidence and support temporarily. And that statement resonated with me, and we parted ways after that. And later that day, he sent me an email and he said, "I want you to meet with my colleague, get coffee with him, speak with him. He'll help you figure out what you need to do." So I met with this person, and you know, later Gene asked me how it went. I said, "You know, it went okay. I learned this." And then he said, "All right, we'll meet with this person." So I met with another person. And then after that meeting, he said, "All right, meet with this other person, and another person, and another person." And he set me up with other clinicians to follow around different areas in medicine. And this went on for months and months. And eventually I had met with over a dozen people in all different areas of clinical medicine and academic medicine, all people that Gene had set up to help me figure out what I wanted to do with my career. In the end, I ended up choosing to go down the MD-PhD route. It is certainly not a path that I would have chosen if it weren't for Gene. And Gene was absolutely right. I love clinical medicine and I love biomedical research. And as a professional, I'm right where I want to be. And so what can we take away from all this? Well, mentorship takes time and energy, which Gene gave in abundance over years and years. And two, that this time has had a profound impact on me, the mentee. And I hope it's had an impact on him as well. And as many other people have said already, what started out as a professional relationship became much more than that. It became a personal relationship and a friendship. And in the last couple of years, I've been fortunate enough to get to know Gene on a more personal level. And I have VCU in part to thank for that, because if he weren't in Richmond, I wouldn't be close enough to be able to visit at his home here. And there are two things that I learned from Gene in the latter phases of our relationship together. So the first is that, of course, Gene is a ceaseless mentor. Every few weeks, I would get an email or a text or a call about something that he thought I would find interesting in medicine or in research, an article or a thought that he had, or a way to game the system to get through the process a little bit quicker or in the most streamlined way possible. And the second was that Gene's personal life was as vibrant as his professional life. The thing that most clearly demonstrates this in my mind is a globe that Gene has. And to call it a globe is a bit generous, because in actuality it looks more like a porcupine, because he has put a pin in every location around the world that he and Sarah and his family have been to. It's really a remarkable thing to behold. And I remarked to him, "Gene, this is an amazing globe." And he said in response to this, "Well, early on, Sarah and I decided that we were going to make travel and life experiences a priority. And literally every time I saw him, he had a new adventure planned, as some of you have heard already. He recently went to Argentina earlier this year and was planning on going to swim with narwhals above the Arctic Circle this spring, which I thought was quite amazing, and that was surprising to me. But the trip that was even surprising to me was that he planned on coming to my graduation in Oxford this spring. And part of the reason why I find that surprising is that, you know, Gene became more than just a mentor to me. He was more like a family member. And for him, it would be an honor and exciting and fun to come to my graduation in the spring. And that sentiment made me feel really special. And so to close, I just have to thank Gene for shaping who I am as a professional more than anyone else, and for shaping how I live my life, and for making me feel cared for as a human being. So, thank you.
It's not easy to be here today, but it's important. We are here to celebrate and commemorate the life of our colleague and father and husband and friend, Gene Peterson. We are celebrating what it is to be compassionate and caring, what it is to be human, what it is to be part of a community, what it is to care about something that is beyond our individual understanding. I will be speaking on behalf of Gene's wife, Sarah, and Gene's children, Andrew and Carolyn. And I will, with everyone's indulgence, as you can see, show a few slides along the way. And I'm going to take my time, because death comes quickly, too quickly. There is never enough time. And I know that you will all know what I mean when I say that. I had 48 years with my father, but it was not enough, not even close. And I had nearly 38 years with my friend Gene. It was not enough, not even close. I am here today because I want to make sure that you know what Gene meant to me as a friend, my best friend, almost like a brother, really, for such a long time. I know that only a few of you in this audience knew Gene as long as I did. But I also know that he made an indelible mark on all of you, and that for each one of us, the process of saying goodbye is so difficult. I know that we will all have our own personal memories and recollections of Gene, and I know that those memories will probably ring clear for a very long time into the future. We will all miss him, and that's the way it should be. I know that because some of the memories I have of the time I spent with Gene are among the most intense and remarkable memories that I can still recall. I remember, for example, like it was yesterday, the first time that we met. We all have friends, but honestly, how many people do you know where you can say, "I recall the exact circumstances of our first meeting"? Let me tell you about those early years. In Chicago, it was. And many of you are medical professionals, so you will understand personally a lot about the stories I'm going to relate to you today. Let me tell you some stories about Gene. I first met Jean in September of 1978 at the University of Chicago, the first day of gross anatomy class in medical school. We had a lot in common, but not so much that it wasn't interesting to share information. You know how that works in school. Everything is new, but not everything is interesting. Jean was interesting. I was from a big city, and Jean was from a small town in Wisconsin. But I had spent two summers in northern Wisconsin at my cousin's house, pumping gas in their standard gas station. I loved small town Wisconsin. And later, I was able to visit Delafield, Jean's hometown, and to meet Jean's parents and Uncle Herman the farmer and Cousin Otis and the rest of the extended Peterson clan. Delafield, unique, a place where in the coffee shop in the center of town, the old folks still spoke Swedish over breakfast coffee. Can you imagine that? Really an incredible place. But the key initial connection was science. Jean was a Marshall Scholar, no mean feat, and he had spent the past 2 years in Leeds, England, working in a nuclear magnetic resonance laboratory studying model membranes. And I had spent time studying membranes too at the NIH. That common interest in membrane biophysics, which was rare at the time, was the initial hook. I wouldn't say that we both stood out initially, and why should we? We were typical, but maybe a bit overconfident in that pass-fail medical school system of the 70s. After all, it was pass-fail. To pass was the goal. About 4 months later, after the exams at the end of the first quarter, I was called into the dean's office, Dean Joseph Seithamel, a legendary, old-school, no-nonsense ex-military dean. This dean was really intimidating. And with all due respects to any of the deans today in the audience, these types of deans, like Seithamel, do not exist today. I walked into the anteroom, and there was Jean Peterson sitting on a chair. I said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And then Jean said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And before we could compare notes, we were called into Seithamel's office together and sat down in front of his desk. He said, "You two guys are here because you barely passed the first quarter exams." Then Jean said, "But we passed, right?" And we both knew that we had passed. And then Seithamel said, "Yes, but I expect a lot more from you two than just to pass. You both have extensive research experience, and I want you both to excel." So we both almost said in unison, "Thank you, Dean, and we will try to excel in the future." And then we went to Jimmy's Pub, and we had a beer. And that was it. From that day forward in 1978, Gene was really like a brother to me. We worked, we studied, we met for coffee with schoolmates at various places on campus. We partied, we made plans, and yes, we both did eventually excel in medical school. And as you might imagine, Gene really began to excel on the wards of the Billings Hospital. During school vacation breaks, Gene would organize trips, his specialty. And twice we went to Keystone, Colorado skiing with groups of mutual friends. We also went to Iron Mountain, Michigan to ski. And these trips will be remembered forever by all of us who attend. In fact, our mutual friend, Tim Johnson, who's the big guy in the middle of this picture, who is now a screenwriter, wrote an award-winning short story about one of those trips called "The Highest Skier in North America." And don't worry, it was only an autobiography. On one break, Jean and I drove down to Mobile, Alabama, in my 1974 Plymouth to go sailing with his friend Kieran in Mobile Bay. On the way down to Mobile, Jean told me we would be passing through Tennessee, which would be for him the 50th state that he had visited. Wow, that's impressive at age 26. But understandable, maybe, since his parents were both school teachers and they traveled with Jean and his brother by car each around the country. But it wasn't enough for Jean to just drive through Tennessee on I-65. We had to go 4 hours out of our way, take a hike up to the crest of the Great Smoky Mountain National Park before he checked in. fantasy off of his list. And that's the view on that day. Later, we did sub-internships and an intensive cardiology rotation together. We front-loaded our rotations so we would have all of our requirements completed by December of fourth year. We did this because Gene needed to go back to Leeds to defend his thesis and get his PhD during the final year of medical school, and I wanted to do an elective abroad. Can you imagine that? Gene actually wrote his doctoral dissertation during medical school. And I know it's true because I helped him type it up on a portable Smith Corona, and I proofread all of the mathematical equations. It's unbelievable, but true. In January 1982, Gene went to Leeds, and I went to China for a boondoggle elective for 2 months. We planned it so that we would meet in Leeds in March of 82. Planning this kind of stuff on essentially zero budget in the pre-internet and cell phone era was not trivial, but we pulled it off. The only slight glitch was that we would miss the match. Do you all know what the match is? Just in case you don't, let me take a minute to describe it. The match is the day on which all senior medical students in the country find out simultaneously where they were starting their residencies 4 months later. Everyone gathers in the medical school auditorium, and the dean passes out envelopes, which everyone opens simultaneously to find their fates. On March 17th, 1982, there were 102 University of Chicago senior medical students in the Billings Hospital Auditorium and two students in the Whitelock Ale House in Leeds, England. And I assume you know who those two students were. And here we are on the way to the pub with Gene's graduate school friend, Carl Clark. Carl is here today. Carl's sitting in the front row. Gene had arranged for his then girlfriend, Sarah, to collect our envelopes. And we called her from a payphone just outside of the pub shortly after. Thank you, Sarah. I don't think I ever really properly thanked you for that favor. I matched at Mass General in Boston. Gene ended up in Chicago with a follow-up anesthesia residency in Seattle. We both got our first choices. I wanted to go to Seattle in part because the chief of anesthesia, the famous physician mountaineer Thomas Hornbein, told Gene that he would take him up Mount Rainier and teach him technical ice climbing if he came to Seattle, which he did. While in Leeds, I told Jim about my travels up to that point and how I wished there was a book available about travel health because I kept getting sick or running into sick backpackers. He listened to my idea to write a practical travel health guide. We came up with a plan. And 4 years later, we somehow published a book together, which was for a time in the pre-internet era, a minor bestseller in the trade paperback realm. There were actually three editions of this book. There is, of course, a very long backstory to that book, but we have to move on because it's only 1986 here in my story. We had many meetings in Boston and Seattle over the next several years, and I eventually ended up in New York at Rockefeller University. On February 11th, 2002, I became interim president of Rockefeller with about 4 hours of advance notice during a crisis period. I called my father first, and then I called Gene. Gene said, "Brother, you need to come up with a plan and fast." He reminded me about Ernest Shackleton, one of our mutual heroes, who had led a famous expedition to Antarctica in 1912. Shackleton's ship got trapped in the ice, and his 28 crewmen spent nearly 2 years stranded, but they all survived. An amazing story of leadership and perseverance. Soon after, I got a package from Gene, this picture. With a note, and I'd like to read a part of that note to you. "Dear Tom, I was down to one print from Sarah and my visit to the Royal Geographical Society in London in 1986. I have been saving it for something really special, and this seems to be the event. Throughout the 23 years I have known you, I've always been so proud of your accomplishments, but the presidency of Rockefeller is one of the best. I thought the dogs in the picture looked like they were waiting for a leader, so the analogy to Rockefeller came to mind. Enjoy the presidency. Lead with courage, insight, and compassion. With a handshake, Gene. Isn't that pure, Gene? I hung this photo in the Grand President's office at Rockefeller, and on the front, I put a post-it note that said, "We have a plan." All of my executive team members saw this picture. A year later, when we had survived the crisis, and not only survived, really, we prospered. My team hosted a celebration and presented to me this picture that originally had a post-it note that said, "We made it." Incidentally, my leadership team lasted almost exactly the same time as Shackleton's, a fact not lost on Gene. He loved this photo. Over the years that followed, Gene would call and say, "Hey, brother, just checking in to see what's new." He always called me brother, and I appreciated that. He was a brother I never had, a like mind, an adventurous spirit, a non-judgmental listener, a steady voice of empathy and encouragement and wisdom. He always had a plan, right up until the end, as we all know. In closing, I hope that I have given you some idea of what Gene meant to me as a long-term friend. And it is important for all of you here at VCU Medical Center to know that Gene was very happy here, that he really felt that he was appreciated, that he respected the leadership here and the support that he received from all of you. He loved his team, and he felt like he could make a difference and contribute here to the common good. He just wanted to do a good job, and he had worked for his entire career to have this type of opportunity. I know all of this because he told me so on more than one occasion. The day Gene died with me at home, in the presence of loving family, I sat on my terrace in New York City, thinking about Gene and 38 years of memories and friendship, and of all the plans left undone. The building in front of me started to glow orange, and I turned and looked southward toward Richmond and snapped this photo. Rest in peace, Gene. Thank you.
We'd now like to invite colleagues and friends that might want to come down and share a story. I know there's some stories out there. Some impressions on Gene. I thought I might get the ball rolling by just telling a story that how Gene helped me. Y'all know the experience of picking up the phone and somebody asks you to do something, and it might be a great honor, and without thinking you say yes, and then you hang up the phone and you said, "What did I just do?" And for me, that moment came about a year and a half ago when the folks at Ochsner Clinical School, the program that's with the University of Queenstown, called and said, "Would I consider being the graduation speaker for this class of young physicians?" And, you know, you don't say no to something like that, but then I hung up the phone and said, "My God, I'm a hospital CEO. What could I possibly say of value to this wonderful group of physicians, or young physicians, and their parents? It's the most important point in their professional career." So what'd I do? I got up off my chair. I walked around the corner. I flopped down in Gene's office, and I said, "What am I going to talk about?" And Ron, his response to me is, Dude, talk about leadership. Talk about the rightful place that these young physicians could take in leading the new order. And so in a moment, my problem was solved. And much like Ron's experience, the next day, a pile of papers showed up at TIC. Turns out there was a whole body of literature that I was not aware of on the rightful place of physicians as leaders. And so suffice to say that I made it through the speech. All went well. The graduation, I'm sure they don't remember a single thing that I had to say. But when I reflect on how many times the word leader has been uttered during today's event, all I can say is, of course. Of course, it only makes sense. So please, someone come down and join me here and offer an observation. Anybody?
Hello. I wasn't prepared to do this and didn't expect there to be an opportunity for this until I arrived and saw it in the program. But I sat jotting some notes and thoughts that I would like to share with from a little different perspective than most of the other wonderful speakers today. My name is Faith Greenwood, and I'm a realtor with Long & Foster. And I had the wonderful opportunity to work with Jean and Sarah and to meet Carolyn before they moved here from Seattle. I probably met them before most of you met them. And they came with great anticipation and eagerness about this opportunity. They certainly did not have to leave Seattle. They were very happy there with their family of friends that they frequently spoke about. Their daily walks with Teak down by the waterfront that they talked about, and I tried my best to find them a place to live so they could walk Teak by the James River. They were so excited, especially Jean, about this opportunity. It was a professional opportunity, like many people don't get the opportunity to have to kind of mold a new position, and he talked to me a lot about that and his eagerness about it. And it was a leap of faith for both of them, and I think especially for Sarah to close her practice and move across country away from the comfort of her family of friends. But they made the decision, and they came here, and they were so excited about it, and I think they felt the warmth and welcomeness from all of you that they met during the interview and decision process. And just a few observations about the depth of Jean and Sarah's personality and the caring nature. Several of you have mentioned his love for beer, but he shared with me about a special gin that he and a particular friend drank. And maybe it was one of you who's here from out of town, or maybe somebody watching from afar today. And I think they got together and shared a bottle of gin before he actually moved to Richmond. His first visit here, when Sarah was not with him, we were taking a tour of Richmond, and we stopped for lunch, and he asked me if there was a Talbot's nearby. He said he would love to go in and buy a gift for Sarah, that he knew her perfect size there. And I think he came out actually without a gift. I don't know if he brought you a gift home, Sarah. I don't think so, but he did make an effort at it, but didn't find that perfect gift to bring you. We also shared our love of dogs. We both have labs. But there was also a conversation about Great Dane sightings and sending pictures to his children. I think whenever they saw a Great Dane, and there were points assessed for that. He had a great love for his family, for you, Sarah, and for you, Carolyn and Andrew. And he showed great pride and love for you all. And I hope your memories and your fond memories and experiences will give you great comfort in the days going ahead. And I just wanted to mention that they quickly acclimated to Richmond and were very obedient in telling them how important it was to put those little white candles in the window at Christmas. And they moved into their home on Hanover Avenue just shortly before Christmas. And the next time I drove by, those white candles were in the window. And I bet they're there now. So I just wanted to say that I think the warmth and the welcoming feeling that they got in making the decision to move here carried through in the 2 years that they have been here. And I know that they've appreciated your continued caring and love and support in the last few months, and I know they will going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I also wasn't prepared to speak, but I thought it really was going to be important. I work with Gene as he set up the UPU, et cetera. My name's Margaret Rittenhouse. I'm the clinical director for HelpLink, which is the employee assistance program, the EAP here at the health system. And my dear caring and passion really has to do with the employees of the health system. So setting up the UPU, our interest and our focus was on the care of the employees, and he really cared about the employees here. We worked on resiliency for the residents, spoke with John Duvall about that a little bit, and he really cared about that issue as well. But it was really my true honor to be invited to help him to die. I was invited to work with him and his family as he processed the impact of his disease and the potential things that would happen along the way. As he went through those potential things and ended up in the MRCU and then ended up down in rehab. And I can't tell you all of the details except that he struggled with this, as you might imagine, and he really would on a very deep level. But he did it really bravely and with heart. His team meant a lot to him as he put his team together. And I asked him, what were some of the values that he lived his life with? And he truly stated his friendships. He lived that, as evidenced by what's been said today. He truly loved you all, no doubt. And my last words from Gene are always be curious, because that's what he was.
I'm Will Zolzer. I'm an orthopedist, but I'm also in, very close with Gene in the operating room, which he and I spent a fair amount of time together. This is still hard. An enormous gift has been wrenched from our midst with speed, with finality that I have trouble comprehending. First of all, I know Gene wanted to thank Dr. Strauss and John Duvall for their vision, their leadership, and their commitment to quality and safety. He talked about that often. They let him get his dream job, and he told me that. You both certainly know how to pick him and support him. He uprooted his family and himself because he saw that our landscape was changing. As we're on the journey, as John Duvall says, to deliver patient care with the highest quality and safety. He recognized that he could add to our journey because he saw holes, he saw opportunities, and he saw that he would be surrounded by support. He organized us, he focused us, he engaged us. He taught me and us that patience and kindness was essential for our change. He was an extrovert who thrived on engagement. I miss him. I pledge to continue to meet with the rising senior surgical residents annually. I pledge to work on the holes. I pledge to be more patient and listen better, but to be more stubborn.
finally, one of the things that Jean asked me to is to make sure that we are kind to Sarah and the children. So I have one saying that I found, which applies to me, but also to you. You will not get over your loss. You will learn to live with it. You will heal and rebuild yourself around your loss. You will be whole again, but you will never be the same. Nor should you be the same, nor would you want to be the same. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Like others, I don't have anything, you know, really prepared or planned, but I do want to share some reflections in my brief time with Gene Peters. First time I met him several years back on a one-on-one, thought we were going to discuss the infection prevention program. I'm an infectious disease specialist, and I'm the director of the VCU Hospital Infection Prevention Program. So that was the reason I was going to see Gene. And we heard about his love of beer. We've also heard about, what was it, gin? What was the other drink of choice? Something like that. I guess he knew a priori that I was from Argentina. So the first thing he wanted to discuss was red wine and what my favorite red wine labels were. If there's anything that I could recommend that could be purchased in Argentina that's not available in the United States. Once we got over that hurdle, and it was a lot of fun, we were wasting most of the hour we had together just talking about wine, really Argentine mother's milk, we call it. We went on to beef, Argentine beef and the cookouts and what were my favorite cuts and if I'd tried tripe and tongue and all that stuff. By now we're about 45 minutes into the meeting. Last we touched on football, or soccer, actually. Very important, passionate sport for Argentines. Wanted to know my take on the clubs. He actually knew the names of the clubs and had actually been to a game, I believe. So it was really a breath of fresh air. Look at this person we brought in who was really connecting with us on a personal level, first and foremost. Of course, we eventually got to talking about infection control and the infection prevention program. And I wanted to share a couple things here. It used to be that during Tuesdays or Thursdays was his clinical day. I also have clinic on Thursday, so we would finish up late. And those who know me know that I have kind of a habit of staying late, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the hospital. So he started the practice of sending me a text message around 6:30 p.m., about 6 p.m. Are you in your office? May I swing by? This was Thursday afternoon, and he did that. Eventually, he just stopped sending the text message, and he just showed up. And I basically came to expect every Thursday evening around 6 p.m., almost like clockwork, I could look behind my shoulder, look into the hallway, and there would be a silhouette that he'd be knocking on the door, and he'd come in. We would discuss various things, whether it was wine again or soccer scores. We would always listen to rock and roll softly so we could talk, and we would discuss the infection prevention program. And I would say this, Gene was always relaxed. He was always supportive. He was always a mentor. He was always positive, and that's really important. But I would say that Gene taught me, and I'm a high energy guy, that people who are relaxed and can be casual, it can be thoughtful at all times, can certainly be high achievers. So for that, I want to say thank you, Gene. We'll miss you terribly, and I promise that we're going to carry on with your vision. Thank you.
Maria tells me that, one more? Okay. I'm sorry? All righty. We'll share at the reception. We'll invite Jason down to conclude his comments today. I do want to invite you all to join us out on the first floor lobby for reception. Jason?
Good afternoon, everyone. I come to you today. I'm the palliative care chaplain here at the hospital, and I have a contrasting context by which I come to you. Everyone else had the opportunity to know Gene personally before this happened, and I did not know Gene until he became a patient of mine, and that's the context by which I speak to you all. I do want to start by saying that I think it made it a little bit easier for Gene to know that his legacy was going to live on by the fact that he became a patient here in the hospital. It's a very unique experience to know that the gift that you've given, you are also receiving, because we're all better for knowing Gene and having him. And that impacted his life greatly. And I think it actually made it easier for him to move on when he came to this point in his life. So I had the opportunity to spend some time with Gene and his family during the moments leading up to his return home. These days were spent in a variety of ways, depending on what medical needs he had and the interactions he had with his family and other supports prior to my visits. As chaplains, we have the opportunity to share these moments with people and their families, but most of the time we don't have longer term relationships, and it's usually not one of our own family members. This added a dynamic to my visits that forced me to sometimes my chaplain hat off and just talk with him man to man, because it's hard wearing that yellow badge all day, and sometimes you need to be able to just curse like a sailor because the situation's so messed up. He wanted to be treated the same way as everyone else, regardless of his administrative role, but he wasn't a regular patient at all. It started out with your normal discussions about diagnoses and what treatments were being done, just like everyone else. The discussions about Emily and his support systems and coping mechanisms came next. We would discuss his interests, touch on random facts and events, and discuss his passions, his faith, his career. All common conversations. But after that, Gene got a wake-up call, because the inevitable discussion about death and his expectations truly let him know that he's not immune to the experiences that our patients have. It made him even more compassionate than he already was. It made him determined to pursue his work even more. And I think that was a challenge for Gene, not because he thought he was going to beat cancer, but because he fully realized that it's like to be a person that's received care and how it affects you. So in time, I witnessed that transition from seeing a man who had so much control of his life and situations, one that instead chose to rethink his life and expectations while living into the moments that he had left. And the wheel started turning. Part of the legacy that Gene wanted to leave behind was an imprint on the healthcare system and its education process. His experience as a patient reminded him that sometimes the work we do has to stop. So he grew more and more comfortable with the idea that perhaps it's the pouring into others that would ultimately bring his dream into a reality. Every relationship he ever had came sharply into focus. And he smiled as I walked in the room one day saying, "I know that this is the last time I'll be in this place I love. But that's okay, because I know that I've done everything I can, and this experience has shown me that I'm leaving everything in good hands. Now, I need to go be with my wife and kids." And that was that. No more words. We hugged and I walked out. So today I'm happy to reflect on the time we spent together and on what he not only gave back to me, but to this entire environment. No, Gene, no matter how bad you want it to be, you were not a regular patient. In your death, you continue to bring life to this community. So Gene, you are a true blessing to so many. I look forward to continue holding hands with those who you've entrusted your work. So today, Gene, we had you for a little while, but it's time to give you back. I leave you with this blessing, inspired by and seen in our final conversations. Blessed are the ones who lead in the face of death. May your light shine upon this place beyond your last breath. Love and hold each moment near, and thank God we had you here. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord be kind and gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you with favor and give you peace. Amen.